This is Film Survival coming to you from Maui, the home of Shep Gordon. Thank you, Shep, for being my first live guest.
Oh, I like being first. Welcome to Maui.
Thank you. So since this show is about surviving and thriving in a creative career, I want to ask you what skills you think are most important in the entertainment business, especially in the beginning.
A willingness to work really hard, be stubborn, not take no for an answer, and just keep focusing on the goal and trying to get to it.
So you didn't study how to become a manager. So what traits do you think you had that allowed you to become a successful manager?
Desperation. I think most important of all, you know, you have to eat and pay your rent. At least if you're brought up that way, and I was. Luck, really important. Hard work. I just found things that in my wheelhouse that was strong in me that I could apply to the work I was trying to do. But I think it's, you know, desperation drives you to outperform yourself.
Define hard work for me, because sometimes people, I don't know if people always know what that means.
Just getting up early and working and going to sleep late, just working.
Like, I mean, doing what it takes.
Yeah, whatever it takes. You know, if it means, in the early days, if it means driving the truck, carrying the equipment, depending on what, you know, if it's a movie set, lighting it, cooking the food for the meals.
Would you still drive a truck?
Yeah, sure. Whatever it takes.
Okay.
That never changes.
What would you say is your work or management style or philosophy, like working with people, the no contract thing, and how do you get paid as an artist?
I just try when I do my work to try not to think in terms of winners and losers. I try and think in terms of winners and winners and set a stage for that rather than a stage for everybody. You know, having to have one guy who wins everything and someone who loses everything. And I think in the long run, that serves the artist better. And it's very hard to describe it unless you're up against it, but it's a way of life. You know, it's, which is sort of bleed into your business. So it's just a way of thought. Mm-hmm. I think most business courses teach you the adversarial business. Like most lawyer training, it's all adversary. And I think if you can get around the adversary part of the equation, you're much better off.
Mm-hmm. And what about working with people? Like, how do you bring the best out of people? What do you do when you have people who aren't working the way you want? How do you manage that?
Again, every situation is completely different. So it's really hard to say. I think you need to know what you want, not compromise what you want. So, you know, I'm a big believer in you need to know what you're talking about. Try and have worked on the skills that you're talking about. So if you're doing in your case, it's film. So if the lighting isn't right, you can't just say to someone, the lighting's not right. You got to say, listen, I really need a shaft. Give me an 817 gel there and try and take them along with you instead of screaming at them that they're jerks. That's the difference between the adversary and the winning and winning. Hopefully the mistake teaches that person something rather than embarrasses them.
So good communication skills.
Yeah.
And why do you not work with a contract?
I don't like lawyers particularly. I don't like what that brings to the spirit of a journey. It sets up the adversarial thing right at the first step of your path, and that usually proves to be true. And I think the kind of services I provide aren't slavery; they're based on need. So if either party doesn't feel like they need each other anymore, they shouldn't continue.
Mm-hmm. But in some cases, you have a contract.
Yeah, there are places where there are contracts, especially when a third creative product is developed. So, for example, I'll work with a with Alice Cooper for 45 years without a contract, but I would never do a record album that doesn't have a contract. I'd never give it to a record company without a contract.
Yeah.
I'd never do a concert without a contract.
Mm-hmm. Other parties.
Yeah, third parties or pieces of product that may live on past our relationship, yeah, but that I really helped create.
Tell me about the lowest moment of your career and the highest moment, if you remember.
I don't think I have any low or high. It's just that they're just moments that get you to the next stone on the river.
There was never a moment where you were sitting in the darkness and saying, what am I doing here?
Every day.
Every day?
Basically.
So we're not, this is not just me?
No, it's everybody. Nobody knows what they're doing. Some people tell you they know what they're doing, but that nobody knows what they're doing. You just do the best you can do. Try not to hurt anybody.
So you feel the imposter thing too? Like you think someone's going to find me out?
Yeah, I guess that's part of it. I mean, that very early in my career was it that I just accepted the fact that nobody really knows what they're doing. Uh-huh. So it's not a matter of finding me out. It's we all do the same thing.
And but, the highs?
Don't get the highs from my business at all. I get the highs from cooking or seeing a little baby laugh, stuff like that. But I don't really get it from, I enjoy it. It's all great, but it's, I'm very detached from it.
So like meeting Salvador Dali, would that have been a high or just?
It's a great moment.
It's a great moment.
Yeah. But he's a human. He's got no idea either. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but,
Right. Okay, well, that's impressive. I can't believe it. Maybe there were so many highs that they don't really stand out when you're just on mountaintops.
But I think a high is a very subjective thing. What is the difference between meeting Salvador Dali and meeting the clerk who's cashing you out at the register in Safeway? Mm. What you bring to it. I mean,
well,
maybe
if you
his painting
yeah,
could really... A Salvador Dali painting could definitely take up more of my time and excitement than the paper bag at the checkout counter.
Mm-hmm.
But the humans?
Right.
They're both miracles.
Okay. But so maybe the meeting the Dalai Lama. Because
yeah,
that's
I'd say
not
the
related.
Dalai Lama was different than Roger Virginia. I've met a few people in my life that are so aware of the fact that they don't know anything. That they sort of know everything.
Wow. He was like that?
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, the Dalai Lama's first thing I'll ever tell you is don't follow me.
Really?
Last thing you should do is follow what I say. Oh, my God.
That's great.
It would be really silly to follow what I say.
That actually leads to my next question, which is you mentioned Chef Roger Verger, and he was your mentor as a chef.
As a human. Happy to be a chef.
What do you think a good mentorship relation should have? Like, what should the person who wants to be mentored, how should they approach the mentor?
Like, just honestly. Tell them they want to, they have a lot of respect for the person, they'd like to be around them, and what can they do to make their life better? Allow you to be near them.
So reciprocal something.
Yeah. Yeah.
You should give something and...
I think if you have it depends what you have to give.
Mm-hmm.
And what their needs are. For me, I cooked for His Holiness. And, I had the ability to cook. He likes to eat. So I was able to offer something that allowed me to be near him.
And what did you offer to Verger?
Verger, I offered a look into the Hollywood world at a different level than customer. Artist, his relationship with the majority of the Hollywood celebrities was as a restaurateur, put on his whites, they'd come in, no real moments, just restaurant moments.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to offer him, in those days chefs were not making a lot of money, I had a lot of resources, so I was able to, what would you like to do? And he said he'd love to take his friends on a bus trip. And so I got the bus and off we went on a trip.
Oh, wow. So that was his idea.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And you did that several years in a row.
Yeah, we did about five, maybe six, seven years.
Oh, my God. So you said that there's a secret to making good risotto, which is, you know, the constant.
No secret. It's just the way it is. You have to mix it for 18 minutes.
Right. And constantly stir it. Is there a secret to working, and what is it?
No, I don't think there's any secret. I think just getting up early and going to sleep later. And trying to have, you know, a good mind. Trying not to think about other people losing, but you winning.
You really take the win-win from the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People to a whole other level, like the priority rule.
I think it's a way of thought. So the way of thought leads to action and stuff.
So your stunts, your famous
one. Yeah, just I found early in life I found that I was good at hoaxes of some sort. So I use them in my to draw attention to the things that need attention drawn to them.
Right.
So that happened to be a billion. And when we talked before, you have a, you know, everybody has a wheelhouse of some things. So depending on what your work is, if you get lucky enough, you can be clear enough on what you're good at, you can apply it to your work. So I realized in college I was just good at putting elaborate stories together that people believed.
You did this before you started managing.
Yeah, I did it in college. And then it was just a skill that I brought to it, and I was good at it.
And then you staged things like saying that Alice was in the hospital when he wasn't because he couldn't perform a stunt.
Yeah, and or, you know, instead of just having a snake, we held snake auditions.
You had snake auditions to get a free snake kind of thing?
Snake for the tour. Yeah.
Right.
But I knew I'd get hundreds of snakes at a big press event.
So make people believe that it's something that they want to be
make
part
aware of the fact that Alice is having a snake on stage, which is what we were trying to sell. So that was a way to, a hoax that didn't hurt anyone. That's a win-win. That was fun.
It was almost like you were doing social media stuff before it even
social media
happened.
Yeah. Break down the truck in England. I wanted people to know there was a guy named Alice who was invading their town. And that was a way, you know, 5 o'clock news, they always kept traffic reports in England.
And the underwear thing and the record.
Yeah, well, the same.
That just came to you sitting in a chair. Why?
I read a story about paper panties being confiscated by customs because they were flammable. I was like, ooh, this is good. Let me get the biggest panty raid in history.
And you made it flammable in another way.
Yeah.
So this is the final question. If you had to choose a recipe to feed a large crew on almost no budget, what would you make?
Chili and rice.
Chili and rice.
Because you can do sloppy joes the next day for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
It lasts for days. Starchy, heavy, cheap.
Very good. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Glad we could do it in Maui.
Yeah.
Whole chicken. Make sure you take the guts and stuff out.
Can the butcher do that?
You just tell him without the guts.
Onions,
sliced.
White onions.
Yeah, any kind of onions. I like sweet better than.
Okay.
Sliced.
Yeah.
3-4 large carrots, sliced like bite size on your spoon. Think about everything going on your spoon when you're eating.
Yeah.
You can't overcook it. So I would say a minimum 2 hours.
Okay.
Maybe 2.5 hours. 5 or 10 minutes, you put in a bunch of dill.
Uh-huh.
And
you keep all that dill in there.
Yeah.
Even though it's kind of chunky.
The chicken soup has, where you don't have to taste any grease or any oil. That's why.
Brilliant.
Then it's ready to eat.